We will start with 1 minute for opening statements, and we will start with Councilmember Orange.
Well, first of all, good evening, Ward 6 Democrats. My name is Vincent Orange. I currently serve as the at-large council member. I also serve as the D.C. Democratic National Committee man. I had the opportunity to work with, I would say, the best council, and that was from 1999 to 2007, when I served with Mayor Williams and Linda Kropp. Took the city from a $518 million deficit to $1.6 billion in the bank, from a control board to no control board, from junk bond status to AAA status, and from getting all the mayor's power restored. Today I'm here because I'm running for re-election. I'm running on the 4 E's: ethics, education, employment, and economic development. All that I would ask from you today is to examine my record. If you don't do anything else, just actually take this and look at the record. Promises are very, very cheap. It's all about results and what you can get done for the citizens of the District of Columbia. I'm Vincent Orange. I'm number one on the ballot. And I believe after you look at the record, that you too will believe that I'm the best person to serve you now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shapiro?
Thank you all. It's good to be here. Peter Shapiro. I'm running for D.C. City Council. Democratic primary. It is in a week and a half, 2 weeks. It's getting very close. I'm running to replace Vincent Orange. We have a broken political system right now. We have some of our highest elected officials that are under investigation. It's hurting the city. It's hurting the city in large part because the council isn't doing their job. They're not getting around to getting to the business of improving schools, of creating jobs, of keeping neighborhoods safe, of revitalizing neighborhoods. It needs to stop. It stops when we bring in new, effective, experienced legislators. Got a great, great track record. Talk about my experience from Prince George's County a lot because it's a proven record of success that I get to bring to the town that I grew up in and that I'm committed to. So I'm looking forward to the conversation tonight. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm E. Gail Anderson, holding as a candidate for D.C. City Council at large. As you can tell, I'm the only female on the ballot. You can't hear me? I'm the only female.
There's a microphone if you need.
That helps. Is my time running, or do I get to start
We'll reset the clock.
Can we reset the clock? The
clock is reset.
Remix. Is it on? Hello? Hello? Can you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm E. Gail Anderson, Holmes, candidate for D.C. City Council at large. As you can tell, I'm the only female on the ballot in this race. I'm a lawyer, I'm a mother, I'm the ASC commissioner for 1B11 over by Howard University in the Florida Avenue area. I'm also the chair, vice chair of Ward 1 Democrats. I've been in this city for a very long time. I'm the only candidate of the four candidates who has not received any corporate contributions. I'm the only one of the candidates that has held leadership positions outside of serving on a council. I want to be your voice for education. I want to be your voice for parking issues in the District of Columbia. I want to be your voice for employment because I believe that D.C. residents need to be employed. I've been out waving in the mornings and I see cars coming in from Maryland and Virginia. When I am waving by the subways, I see people with their suits and briefcases coming from Maryland and Virginia. We want to hire D.C. residents. We want to deal with our parking issue. I know that there are parking issues in this area just as they are in Ward 1. I want to be the voice that is not being listened to in D.C. I want to be your voice. E. Gail Anderson Owens, I'm number two on the ballot, which means we're second to none.
My name is Sacred Biddle. I am also running for the at-large seat on the council. I'm running because I love the District of Columbia. And I was very, very fortunate to be raised in the district and go to really, really good public schools. Not because I lived in a neighborhood that had great schools, because my parents are here this evening, thought that it was enough of a priority. They were prepared to spend their time to find really good schools in the city for me to go to and to do whatever it took to get me there every day. And those excellent schools propelled me off to Morehouse College, another career in education, and brought me back to the district convinced that if we reform our school system so that every child in the city gets the kind of education that I got, then we will transform the District of Columbia as we know it. The problem is education issues, employment issues are all obscured and hiding behind right now the ethical scandals of the day. We need to elect ethical leaders to take us forward. So I'm looking forward to answering your questions and learning more about what we can do to move the city in Ward 6 forward. Thank you.
Okay, let's begin the conversation this evening, and we'll start with you, Reverend Holness.
Dr.
Holness, they'd be happy to.
I got it the old-fashioned way. I earned it.
Very good. Let me ask you about Reservation 13 and the Washington Redskins. You were asked this at a recent forum earlier, and you talked about being open to the idea of giving land. Could you expand on why you would be open to giving land to the Washington Redskins to have a presence in Washington, D.C.?
Oh,
and we'll give you a minute. We'll give everybody a minute on this question.
Okay. The reason I said that was because I read the agreement, and the land has to be used.
We can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me
now?
There
we go.
Yes.
I read the agreement. I read the statement that said that the land had to be used for the purpose for which it was given to the district, which was for recreational purposes and those kind of purposes, for the purpose for which it was used. And I may have misconstrued it, but I believe that whatever we need to do, but I think that the land should be used for purposes that will benefit all of the residents in the District of Columbia, whether or not the Redskins are benefited from it. But I think whatever it is used for, perhaps we could use it for other purposes, for resources for our young people, that they can build resources for them, after school programs, senior buildings, whatever the purposes that the district residents want to use that land for, I think it ought to be used for. But the Redskins should be a part of that, yes.
Okay, I'm a little confused. Let me stay with you, because I'm a little confused here, because you kind of brushed over where you said you may have misinterpreted what the purpose of the property is, and that is for recreation use. Do you think having a professional sports team is considered recreational use for the city?
I stand up, maybe I can. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Find the preacher in you.
Yeah, right. Thank you very much. I think that football is recreational use. Yes, it's recreational. It offers other activities. But if you look at the activities that our sports teams do, they are not just sports team. They utilize the youth in our community, are afforded other opportunities to do different activities with our sports teams. So they're just not sports teams. They bring income into the city. We need as much income and revenue in the District of Columbia as we can get. If you look at the disparity in the incomes in the district, one part of the district median income is $425,000. The other part of the district's median income is $60,000. So whatever can bring us together, that's what I hope would profit us to do.
Let's hear from the other candidates. We'll start with Mr. Biddle down here on this end.
Sure. So, you know, I mean, I grew up in the city, loved the Redskins, had the opportunity growing up to go to a few Redskins games, the old RFK. It's a great experience. Does that mean we should be spending our money to subsidize the team being here to do something that wouldn't generate any revenue for the city at all anyway? Like, that's at the top of, like, the list of really, really bad ideas. For us to spend public dollars and public land to subsidize them moving a practice facility in so that they can enhance the amount of money they're able to make at games in Maryland, and we don't get anything in the deal. So I think that's a horrible idea, especially in the context of the time, effort, and energy to put into developing a plan for the site that will spur and encourage economic community development that people in the city will actually benefit from, that will also grow the tax base so that we are benefiting in multiple ways from the use of that site. So I think that, you know, as much as I love the Redskins, I can watch them fine from the comfort of my home right now. And if I'm so moved to go see them practice, I will trek out to Virginia to do so.
Mr. Shapiro?
Yeah, I think the discussion started, and I think there was a bit of miscommunication around exactly what the issue is that we were talking about. So the first question, when Dr. Holness was the question was posed, the question was about Reservation 13, Hill East. And the question actually wasn't about the stadium itself. It was about the land next to the stadium where there has been a planning effort that's been going on since 2002, wholesale mixed-use redevelopment of the community. That there's a whole lot of buy-in from folks in the community. And then in the 11th hour, there was the opportunity, discussion around putting a Redskins training facility there. And that's something that I oppose and oppose fiercely. This has been a community effort that's been ongoing for a long time. It will be great for the community and a revenue generator, and the training facility does not make sense in that context at all.
Mr. Orange.
No, I do not support spending $50 million to build a training facility for the Washington Redskins. I was there in 2002. The city operates pursuant to a plan called the Economic Resurgence of Washington, D.C., Citizens Plan for Prosperity. 40 action items. Reservation 13 is part of those action items. A tremendous amount of planning has taken place. The community has come in, they've had charrettes, and this will be a mixed-use development. The Washington Redskins practice facility will not do anything for the District of Columbia but enhance Dan Snyder's empire that he's built. Unlike the baseball stadium, I support the baseball stadium. The baseball stadium pays for itself. It puts money in the general fund. The only problem with the baseball stadium is that this past administration took our $450 million community benefit fund and they did something else with it. The $450 million was supposed to go to the schools, libraries, putting laptops and computers on children's desks and things of that nature. And we just did not have the leadership that stood up to the learners and continued with the plan that has been
done
already.
Let me ask you all about combined reporting. We'll start with you, Dr. Holness. Would you vote to require combined reporting of companies that do business in the District of Columbia? And we'll give 30 seconds to each of you on this.
Yes, I would. As I stated earlier, I'm the only candidate here that has not accepted any corporate contributions. All of the candidates here have accepted corporate contributions, including Mr. Biddle and Mr. Orange contributions from the Strip Club in Ward 5 that they claim they adamantly oppose, but I do.
But aside from campaign, I'm talking about profit income tax filing for combined reporting. You would vote to compel corporations that do business in the district to pay their taxes here?
Absolutely.
Mr. Shapiro?
I do support that. It's not a campaign finance issue, but it's something that it would be a way to bring in new revenue to the city. And if we're looking for ways to bring in new revenue, that's something that we should consider.
Mr. Orange?
Yes, I support combined reporting because right now our budget is already based on that revenue. I believe last fiscal year it was $23 million. So combined reporting, really what it is, it brings in outside income, so corporations have to file on all their income here in the District of Columbia. By law, we can't have a commuter tax. We have about 50% of our property is exempt from taxation already because of the federal property, then with all the nonprofits, so we need to expand our tax base, and one of the ways to do that is with combined reporting. I believe they actually have combined reporting in Maryland, and this is an issue that's been with us for several years, but our budget is based on combined reporting. And this did not happen this fiscal year. It happened the prior fiscal year.
Let me stay with you, because you worked for arguably one of the biggest offenders when it comes to combined reporting, and that was PEPCO, who pays no taxes in the District of Columbia. When you worked for PEPCO, did you urge them to pay their fair share? Did you lobby for them on combined reporting in other jurisdictions?
Not lobby them for combined reporting. My job at PEPCO was to bring smart grid technology to the city, which I accomplished. It was a 80-something million-dollar project. We got $50 million from the White House. In fact, smart grid technology is across this country. The only state that did not receive funding was Delaware, because Delaware received $500 million to build the electric car factory. So that was my job. That was my primary focus there. Mission accomplished. Right now, the PEPCO is installing 288,000 smart meters, and that's what's taking place in the city right now.
Mr. Biddle.
So, yeah, I support combined reporting. And one of the things we have to keep in context here is that oftentimes we as a city are doing things to create opportunities for corporations to set up and grow the business within the district. So for us to do those things, facilitate them coming in and setting up shop, and then to lose the revenue that they would be generating for us is both unfair and unwise for how we use our economic development dollars. So yeah, absolutely support combined reporting.
Let me ask you, as we speak, there is a vigil and a march going on in Columbia Heights because of the recent hate crime attacks in that neighborhood, really across the district. We'll start with you, Mr. Shapiro, and we'll give each of you 30 seconds. What is your message to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community who feel really under siege right now and have testified publicly before the council that they don't feel that the Metropolitan Police Department is doing enough to ensure that their community is properly protected? And we'll give everybody 30 seconds on this with Mr. Shapiro.
You know, we're not doing enough. And the Metropolitan Police Department, MPD, needs to do a lot more. You know, there's the gay lesbian liaison unit, and there's all sorts of steps that are moving the city in the right direction, but there's a whole lot more to do. And it's not just the instances of violence, it's what the police does about it in response to it. So we need to, there should be cultural sensitivity training at all levels of government, but especially in MPD. And that will help raise awareness amongst the police officers as well.
Mr. Orange.
Well, during my tenure as chairman of the Committee on Government Operations, I had the opportunity, along with Councilmember Jim Graham, to bring the transgender community under the Human Rights Act for protection. So that is a law that the police department and others should be utilizing to make sure that transgenders are protected as well. Also, you mentioned PEPCO. When I was at PEPCO, PEPCO did not provide for domestic benefits, and I did push that through at the behest of GLAA. And also, Jim Graham and I were the ones that established,
Well, let me ask you, when I asked you if you pressed inside of PEPCO about combined reporting, you said that wasn't your job, but neither was pushing for domestic rights. Why is it? Why would you pick that issue and not another?
Sure, because I was testifying before the council, and Rick Rosenthal was the person, and he came up and he testified on that issue and asked, "Would I look into that issue?" And I looked into the issue, told PEPCO that I thought it was wrong. I had the backing of Betty Ann Kane, who was the chair of the Public Service Commission at that time, and I took it to Beverly Perry, and we changed it so folks could get access to health benefits.
Mr. Biddle?
Yeah. So I mean, there's obviously a number of issues here. You know, one, in a diverse city like we have got to work to build and show that we have value for a truly inclusive and diverse culture. What we're seeing with these incidents is that there are serious issues there. You know, when I was on the Board of Education, we had a fair amount of controversy around a set of health education standards that talked explicitly about teaching about the spectrum of human sexuality, and we had lots of people push back against it. You know, we've pushed to make sure that it was done because we believe we've got to better educate our young people to understand what's right and wrong about these issues.
Dr. Holness?
I think it's an atrocity when these things occur. I am one who has worked with civil rights all of my life. I'm with the NAACP at age 12, elected to the National Board of Directors, worked as a state youth president. I was one of the ones who was instrumental in taking the Confederate flag down in Columbia, South Carolina, prior to moving back to Washington, D.C. I've been threatened a lot of my life, so I know what discrimination is. I know what those kind of disparities are, and I think there has to be some kind of understanding of who we are and a cultural understanding through workshops and other kinds of activities that we might all be on one accord.
I got cards up here, and we've gotten some emails from people who want to talk about ethics. It's obviously in the front page of the paper every day. So let's go through it step by step, if you will. And we'll start with Mr. Biddle. Do you support campaign finance reform that would restrict, and tell us how you, if you do, what restrictions you would place on corporate contributions and bundling? And we'll get through everything. Let's just stay with corporate contributions and bundling for right now.
Sure. So,
and we'll go a minute on this.
Okay. So yeah, I came out early. In fact, was part of the announcement for the campaign for public trust. I think that it's clear that the corporate contributions in our elections have had a downward effect on the level of ethics and the public trust we can have in what our elected leaders are doing. So I'm in support of getting rid of corporate money in campaigns because of what we see happening and just the overarching position that it's creating an environment in which the residents can't believe in what they're hearing from their elected officials because it gives the appearance that positions are being bought, they're not there on the merits, and we have to get it out. I mean, anytime you have contractors putting significant amounts of money into campaigns, it is hard not to believe that those individuals are buying access and influence to further their business interests. And then when you see in turn they get very lucrative city contracts, it looks to complete that circle. So I think that you know, we've got to get a handle on it and support of, you know, getting rid of corporate money, which then address a bundling issue as well.
But are you taking corporate contributions?
I have received contributions from corporations during this campaign, but this is about winning campaigns so we can, as legislators,
let me give you 30 seconds. Right. Why not lead by example? Why not
take the
high road on this? If this is something that you believe should be the law of the land, why do you need a law?
A couple of reasons, right? One, you know, this is a competitive endeavor. I don't think you unilaterally disarm, right? Because you can't change the law sitting at home saying, if I had been able to run the campaign I need to run, then I could have done
well,
what needed
to be
done.
Well, that's not true. There's a ballot initiative. There are people that are not elected officials who are getting it on the ballot. They're getting it
correct.
Done.
And I'm one of those people. I'm carrying a copy of the petition right now. You're free to sign it when we wrap up this evening. You know, I'm supporting the effort wholeheartedly, and this needs to be changed. But the reality is the current council members have not gotten in front of this issue to change it, and I think we need to have council members who will.
Dr. Holness?
I'm glad you asked that question. I'm the only person on the ballot who has not received any corporate contributions. I believe that it's a pay-to-play situation, and when corporations give contributions, that assist them in influencing whatever legislation or whatever deals they want to make. I'm unbought, I'm unbossed, and I will speak truth to power. And I believe that I am the right choice to make the decisions for DC as we go forward to help bring some integrity back to DC City Council, even in terms of our ethics. I don't need to sign a paper to say that I'm not going to use profane language or curse or cuss anybody out to that extent. And the same thing, I believe, I've read in other places that there are other campaigns that are won without a lot of corporate contributions. So you don't need necessarily corporate contributions to win. It's whether or not you touch base with the people in the community, which is what we've done. We've been out of the community. We've been waving in the community. So I believe, no, bundling is awful as well.
Mr. Shapiro.
Yeah. We should ban corporate contributions. I support the ballot initiative 70. We should ban folks who are contracting with the city from contributing to council members. That's a problem that banning corporate contributions won't address. That's a second level of things that we need to do. We should ban constituent service funds. They're not being used for what they're supposed to be used for, which is helping constituents. So that's something that's not helpful right now. It's just there's all sorts of ways in which it's being abused. And ultimately, we are a progressive city. There are all sorts of ways in which we can be a model for reforming campaign finance. And why not have us focus on public financing of campaigns? Why not just go right for it and take the influence of money out of politics and go for it? And that's something that I would love to take the lead on if I were elected, because campaign finance is a huge problem for this city. And it's splashed across the front page of the paper almost every day. And the worst offenders are around money orders right now, and Mr. Orange might have something to say about that.
Mr. Shapiro, let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Biddle. You have taken corporate contributions.
I have taken corporate contributions, and I'll continue to take corporate contributions. It's important to win this election, and this is how you win the election. And I won't take money orders because I actually think that's not transparent enough. But with full transparency, I'm taking corporate contributions, and I'm taking contributions from folks who will help me get elected, because we need this change, and this is what it takes given the current system.
Mr. Orange.
First of all, I think that banning corporate contributions is just half of the pie. We have to do it all the way, and that's the reason why I reintroduce again today to ban corporate contributions and ban council members for working for the corporations. I mean, it's really a self-serving piece of legislation that they have on the table. On the one hand, they will stop you from taking corporate contributions, but they work for the corporation. We have council members that make $250,000 working for someone that's doing business with the city. We have one council member that has two jobs. So they get your $125,000, $250,000 from a university, and then $50,000 from another job. How can you do all that when the city is in the situation it is in today? So yes, I mean, I'm an attorney, I'm a CPA, I have 4 degrees, I look at this stuff very carefully, and I can tell you, what they're doing is not sincere. If you want to be sincere, pass a law that bans corporate contributions and council members for working for those same corporations. Because they can use those corporation jobs to save up their money. They don't
Time.
Need contributions. use the money they get from the corporations to run.
Mr. Shapiro, you went back in for 30 seconds.
I do. You'll allow for just a little free-for-all with this. I support what Mr. Orange said, which is I support no outside employment for council members. I think it's right on my lid. I think it's important for council members to have this be a full-time job. There's enough to do. And what the question, though, Mr. Orange, is, okay, I support that. That's a good thing. So setting that aside, do you or do you not support banning corporate contributions?
As I indicated today, as I indicated in an editorial to the Washington Post long before you even got in this race, and I reiterated it today. I believe you should ban corporate contributions along with outside employment for DC
County. So Mr. Orange, you can't have one without the other.
No, I don't believe you can't have one without the other.
And so when this was put forth as an amendment to the ethics bill that you voted on, and you had an opportunity to vote on that prior, and you voted against that, why the change now? Well, you did not support Councilmember Wells
let me give you my record. Okay. I voted first of all, I wrote 40% of the ethics legislation that was under consideration. And in there was term limits. It was to ban council members from holding outside employment. And there was a couple other things. One was to have an annual council member certification. And the biggest thing is to remove a council member from unethical behavior. So two of the four things I proposed passed the council. It's all about getting the votes. And so now I'm back pushing again to ban outside employment and to force those council members that are coming up with the self-serving legislation, like Councilmember Chet. She's the one that has two other jobs. You know, Councilmember Jack Evans, we found out that he was working for a lobbyist over a 10-year period, made $500,000. No one wants to talk about that. Councilor Michael Brown, he was working with the organization when he brought in the gambling legislation. So you have to look at these things and understand what's going on. It's one thing to try to pull the wool over the public, but for me that's looking at this and been with the best council during that 8-year period, I'm not going to be fooled by self-serving legislation. I'm going to continue sounding the horn. I'm going to be the Paul Revere on these issues.
Mr. Biddle, you were shaking your head and smiling. Do you want to get back in on this?
I mean, yeah. You know, just the suggestion of self-serving is sort of odd. I mean, Councilmember Orange has been, you know, a proponent of pay raises for the council, right? And he readily accepts that this is a far inferior council to groups that he's been on in the past. You know, in past councils, he was a proponent of pay raises for council members without having the public have an opportunity to weigh in. And, you know, he talks about these ethics bills. Like, one of his pieces was to increase council member salaries. Like, anyone who would suggest for a moment that the council as it currently is performing is worthy of a pay raise would have their head examined, right? So it caught my attention that, to suggest things are self-serving. Like, I mean, I would offer that pay raises are fairly self-serving.
Dr. Holness, you went back in?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to stand up because even though it might seem like I'm still sitting. But it sounds all hypocritical to me because all three of them have said that they would ban corporate contributions, but they're all taking corporate contributions. Mr. Arndt said that he voted for term limits, but he's been in Ward 4, Ward 5 for two terms. He ran for mayor, he ran and lost. He ran for chair of city council and lost. He tried to get the position when the Democratic Party appointed Mr. Biddle, and he lost that. Then he came back and won by a narrow margin, and now he's running again. I mean, come on. A rocket scientist ought to see through what's happening up here with these gentlemen with their hypocritical statements about not taking corporate contributions. Mr. Arndt said it was legal, but so was slavery, and it was still wrong. So come on, guys. Wholeness is the right choice.
Let me go back to Mr. Orange and let's talk about the. Well, you wanted to go ahead. Go absolutely. Go right ahead.
First of all, Mr. Bill, I never introduced legislation for pay raise. You know, I had conversations with Councilmember Mary Che, Councilmember Jack Evans, and the others to see what it would take for them to move forward and ban outside contributions. And we looked at the Los Angeles model because they had the same problem. And what they did is they raised the salaries of those council members because a lot of more professionals, they were making a lot more money. In this case, those four did not buy in, and since they did not want to do it, the legislation I introduced just banned the outside contributions. So let's get that straight. Now, if we want to talk about, you know, real ethics, Mr. Biddle was supported by Kwame Brown, by Mayor Gray, by Harry Thomas Jr. That's how he came into being. So, you know, let's be very accurate on what's taking place here. The bottom line is, folks, we need to talk about our records. What have you achieved? And I hope we will get to that, because this stuff about pay to play, my record is not a pay to play record. My record is superior, and hopefully we'll talk about our records at some point tonight.
Mr. Orange, you opened the door. Let me ask you about your record. On your website and on your campaign literature, you have two quotes, one from the Washington Post, which is an accurate quote, but from 2010, and they haven't endorsed you in two cycles since then. And the other is a quote from the Washington City paper, which, in all fairness, sir, you take completely out of context, and it actually misrepresents what the author of that article, Alan Suderman, actually wrote about you. And you actually turned the meeting completely around. Can you explain how that is ethical?
Absolutely. You know, as you started out, the quote is accurate, and I'm not.
Well, no. The Washington Post quote is accurate.
That finished?
Sure.
I mean, the quote is accurate, and the other quote is accurate too. When you put a quote and you put three dots, that sends you back to the article to examine it for yourself, and it has the date. First of all, look at movies. They give you a quote. You can't put the entire article in there. That's what happens. And that's what happens for me right here. He has Washington Post endorsement. That's what you do.
Mr. Shapiro.
Yeah, that right there was the definition of the difference between what's accurate and what's ethical.
Dr. Holmes.
And what came to my mind when he was speaking was deceptive practices and sound bites. And that's what we're trying. That's what they're trying to win this election on: deceptive practices and sound bites. And I think we need something new, a fresh face, someone that will do something new and have integrity and ethical behavior for the District of Columbia.
Mr. Biddle, did you in on this at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, following up with the selectively clipping, right? So Councilmember Orange is partially correct that I was endorsed by the chairman, the mayor, and Harry Thomas Jr. We all know the number of issues they've been embroiled in since then, right? Now, the part that he leaves out is that I was also endorsed by several other council members, including the council member from Ward 6, Tommy Wells, Mary Che, Muriel Bowser, people who the public had hold in much higher regard, right? So on balance, right, yes, I was supported by many of the current council members, and you know, it is what it is, but like, let's be accurate. Let's, you know, and this is what being honest and forthright is about. It's not about selectively clipping a piece here and there to send some you know, message to people that is wholly inaccurate. It's about telling the whole truth so that people know they can trust you. And right now, the problem is the public feels like they have a hard time trusting a number of people they've elected because they're doing things just like this over and over again.
Mr. Shapiro, we'll let you have the final word, Mr. Orange.
I actually want to take up something that Mr. Biddle says, because I think it's important to note that, Mr. Biddle, you have consistently not talked about your experience as an interim council member, and that is selective as well. So I remember reading from an article from the last round of elections that it didn't get mentioned that you were the incumbent as you were running for the seat. And it's not something that I see or hear you talk about a whole lot when we are here, that you actually served on the council for 4 months. And if you're not proud of that, why aren't you proud of that?
Let me let Mr. Biddle respond, sure, because that was directly at him, and then I'll come back to you, Mr. Orange, for the final word. Go ahead, yeah, Mr. Biddle.
So I thank Mr. Piero for pointing that out for those of you who did not already know that. Clearly, he's not spending, as much as we spend a lot of time together during the week and the evenings, he's not with me when I'm out talking to people at their homes or across the city every single day, in which I talk about a lot of the things that I've done. As you all know, in these forums, we're hindered by having a very small amount of time to communicate with a lot of people. There are things that we get a chance to talk about, and there are things that we don't. I don't for a second buy the notion that I'm hiding something from people. There's no question that people know that I served on the council. I talk about what I've done on the council. I just this morning sent an ANC commissioner work that I did on the council because she had questions about what is going on with truancy in the city. So there's no doubt that I'm forthright about my record and things that I've done in the city.
Mr. Orange.
Yeah. Oh, once again, the Orange record. Today, the council passed my legislation for early childhood education that will mandate that the school systems prepare our 3 and 4 year olds for kindergarten and that come up with a curriculum that mandates that they will be able to read independently upon entering the fourth grade and that they can add, subtract, multiply, and divide. It was my legislation that mandates that the school system provide books for our children for their core subjects by the second week of school. I'm the one that started the school modernization project by reopening McKinley Tech at McKinley Technology High School, an $85 million project. I'm the one that brought public access television to Brooks Mansion. I'm the one, in terms of jobs, I had the first major economic development project in 20 years, Home Depot, giant. Just about 6 weeks ago, another project that I've been working on for quite some time, we broke ground for Costco, Shoppers Food Warehouse, and Marshalls. I've created more jobs than anybody up here. And that's because I worked for the council, we worked hard, we're working to a plan called the Economic Resurgence for Washington, D.C., Citizens Plan for Prosperity. I don't proclaim to be a perfect individual, but I proclaim to be the best person running in this race, and I've produced, and I would hope that we could talk about the record.
Let me ask you guys about education, since you brought that up, and the council did vote today. Let me ask you about a specific plan that Chairman Brown proposed. We'll start down here with Mr. Biddle, and that is requiring students for graduation to take an SAT or an ACT and apply to a secondary school for 30 seconds. Do you each support that, or what are your thoughts on that requirement for graduation?
Yeah, so I don't support requiring students to take ACT and SAT for graduation, because the problem here is not that we're not telling them to apply to college or they need to be thinking about that. The problem is that we have fundamentally failed to prepare them to be college ready as seniors, to make sure that the pre-K through 12 education they get puts them in a position to make a decision exiting high school to go to college or to go directly in careers. That's where the breakdown is occurring. It's not that students get to their senior year and all of a sudden find themselves not sure of what direction they want to go in. And requiring them to take the test does not make them better. We've got to do a better job educating them.
Dr. Dennis.
I'm a former college administrator. I've taught at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. I've taught at Benedict College in Columbia, South Carolina, Ohio State College in Baltimore, Maryland, and a former special assistant to the president of UDC. Everybody is not college material. Everybody cannot take tests. It has been proven that there are certain groups in our culture that are not test takers. So to make it a requirement that they take the ACT, the SAT, in order to go to get their degree from high school in D.C., I think is not a good policy that we should follow. I think if they pass their classes as they are required to take in school, then they should be allowed to graduate.
Mr. Shapiro?
Yeah, no, I don't support that either. I don't support mandatory SAT and ACT. It doesn't address what the fundamental problems are in the school system. It's kind of a window dressing approach. At best, it's a feel-good approach, but it's not good education policy.
Mr. Orange?
Well, I read the Washington Post today, the editorial says that 36% of adults in the District of Columbia are illiterate. If you've been following what's been taking place in the school, we now have 10,000 young people in our school system below the third grade. So I think that's where the issue is, making sure those children have a foundation for life to build upon and move forward. There was a Wall Street Journal article February 13th that indicates that there are 8 states now that are considering legislation to hold third graders back. They can't read independently. These states actually are now looking at how many jails they're going to build based on that. So the reason why today that I voted for that
time.
Legislation is because my early childhood education piece was part of the overall package. And it's the greatest
time, Mr. Orange.
Number. And the DCPS backed my proposal and then backed the rest of it. But it's about 7 votes.
Let me shift gears a little bit here and get you guys, just by a show of hands, I'm going to read a list of officials in the district government, and by a show of hands, if you show your support, if you think that they're doing a good job and should stay in their job, raise your hand. If you don't think they're doing a good job, You have a problem with the rules, Mr. Shapiro?
Only that. I mean, the bind that it puts us in is it takes a very complex issue around leadership and policy and asks us to simplify without explanation.
I think it's a pretty easy question, especially with elected officials. Would you or would you not vote to reelect these officials if they are up for reelection today? I know you don't get to vote for every single ward council member, but other candidates around the city have been.
Yeah, but Mark, it being an easy question.
So you don't want to say whether or not. Let me put it to you. You decide whether you want to answer. Chief Lanier, should Chief Lanier stay? Do you? Those who think Chief Lanier is doing a good job.
I'm not going to get into it because it might be mildly entertaining for people. It's not productive.
You don't think it's informative if you think Chief Lanier should stay?
Mark, is that, you know, are we going to be asked to do a human resources rundown on everybody in district government right now?
I can
be honest with you, right?
I got 14 names.
I would guess the rest of the people here don't spend their time thinking about who in district government needs to stay, who needs to go, and based on what information.
Really? I think a lot of people do think about that, particularly at a time when the federal government is investigating the mayor and the chairman of the D.C. Council.
Well, I think they might be thinking about some people, but I don't think that they're thinking
about. So you won't say whether or not Chief Lanier should stay or go? That's fine. Anybody else?
Stay.
Councilmember Orange?
I believe she should stay, but I'm going to stand with Mr. Biddle.
You don't like the question. I get that.
I just think it's unfair.
How about Dr. Gandhi? Should Dr. Gandhi stay?
No.
Anybody?
He should go.
Not without a national search to see if we can find somebody who's as good or better.
Mr. Biddle, you care to weigh in on Dr. Gandhi?
I told you I wasn't.
You don't like
this, right? I mean, you could keep asking the same question and keep getting the same answer.
I will. Yeah. Mr. Orange?
What I would say about Dr. Gandhi is he's balanced the budget for 15 consecutive cycles. He's gotten us AAA bond status. The city has been able to stay away from the control board. So I do believe that he needs to have a review. And we examine this man in June when his contract is up for renewal, and if the mayor or someone else comes up with a better person, then we examine that person, and then we vote based on the facts. But I can't tell you get rid of him when he's probably the person that has the most credibility for Congress right now.
All right, let me ask you about elected officials. Go ahead.
You're doing something right because you're getting all of us testy, so something's working over here.
Let me ask you about elected officials. If the election were held today, and I'll go through a list of elected officials here, and I think there's one that we can probably get off to a good start with. If the election were held today, would you vote to reelect Vincent Orange? Who would vote to reelect Vincent Orange? Mr. Orange, you're not going to give yourself a nod?
We'll stipulate. I'm running.
We'll stipulate. How about Jack Evans? Who amongst you would vote to reelect Jack Evans today if he were up for reelection?
No opposition.
I'm saying if you could vote to stay or go.
Chances are good.
Councilmember Barry? Any votes of support for Councilmember Barry? Yvette Alexander? Phil Mendelson? Mr. Shapiro, you like the job Phil Mendelson is doing. How about Jim Graham? Dr. Holness, you like Jim Graham? How about David Catania? You sort of like him, Mr. Shapiro?
The
two of you sort of like him? How about our host, Councilmember Wells, Ward 6 Councilmember Wells? Mary Che?
And again, this is a sign of these guys not wanting to be forthright and answer the questions and skirt over, which is what they've done in their position, skirting over the issues and not being forthright with the people. And that's being forthright is making a decision.
How about Muriel Bowser? You like Muriel Bowser? Michael Brown? Chairman Brown? That's my list. Mr. Orange, at a recent debate, you were asked about the investigation that Councilmember Wells led into Chairman Brown's SUV that pretty much cost him his seat on the Metro Board and his chairmanship of his committee. You were quoted as saying something along the line of that Councilmember Wells should have let it be. Can you explain what you mean by that?
What I've indicated is that
and we'll give you a minute to answer this.
I believe that Councilmember Wells made his point and he kept going on. And he kept going on. And he kept going on. And the chairman, what he did, he used the occasion. Because as you know, I just got back on the council. Mr. Wells clearly knew that the chairman was going to reorganize the council because I had to get a chairmanship. And through that process, because he had rubbed the chairman the wrong way after he had made his point about the investigation, the chairman came up with a reorganization plan that every council member voted for except Mr. Wells. And I said, and what I would say to him is that, you know, sometimes you got to look at the greatest good for the greatest number. I said that Mr. Wells had a great plan, a livable, walkable community here in Ward 6. And I believe he should stay focused on that and let the people decide about Mr. Brown, because he had made his point as related to
Tom. So you said he made his point, but he went too far. At what point should he have stopped? Should he have launched an investigation? Should he have held hearings, or was that too far?
All that was fine.
So at what point did he cross the line in your mind?
Well, apparently there was something between those two that kept going on. It was always discussions, and those two, you could tell that their relationship had changed. And it's just like today. You know, for me, I've been fighting this issue for 10 years with Bear Williams to take over the schools and also ensure that our children can read independently upon entering the fourth grade. If you go back and check the record, it was Vincent Orange that stood with Mayor Williams to take over school. And if you look at the school governor's legislation, you will see the same legislation this council passed today I had in that piece of 10 years ago. So that's what I'm saying. Do we want those 10,000 children to have an opportunity at a decent quality of life, or do we want to go on some personal vendetta that Vincent Orange may have against somebody? And I said, no, I want to go with 10,000 children, make sure that the school system continues to move forward.
Mr. Shapiro?
Yeah, I want to comment on that in relation to Mr. Orange, and I guess my answer about myself will come out in the approach to him, which is, this is a very basic issue around leadership style, okay? When your own values bump up against your colleagues, what do? When do you have to say, okay, sometimes I believe in this strongly enough, this is important enough, where I know through my actions it may mean that I may no longer have a seat at this table. And sometimes you just need to say, and this was in relation to Harry Thomas too, because Mr. Orange also said he didn't want to step out against Mr. Thomas because he was afraid that he wouldn't be able to keep a seat at the table around the investigation of it. That is what you said, and you said it on the record. And the bottom line is, there are times when you just need to say, no, this is important enough, this is right enough, and if I get some pushback from it, so be it. If I lose my committee chair, so be it.
Mr. Warren, we'll come back to you. We'll let you wrap up. Go ahead. Did you want to?
Again, the deceptiveness, because what Mr. Orange is saying here, he has said before, it was as though you don't speak out and speak the truth and threaten your position on council, threaten your position to get a chairmanship, or threaten your position to be appointed to a committee. And he has said that. And that's where he said that. And that's the interpretation that I received about Tommy Wells having gone too far. I think Tommy Wells went far. I think Tommy Wells did an excellent job in what he did. And I think the information that came out needed to come out, and the public needed to know. And I believe that council members ought to drive their own vehicles, regardless of whether or not they're your chair or otherwise. We'll be paid enough money to buy our own vehicles. And most of us have vehicles. So it's a ludicrous situation anyway. These are all distractions to take the city off course and to deal with the issues at hand, which is education, employment, affordable housing, parking, and other issues that we're confronted with in the district.
30 seconds, Mr. Orange.
He's got a minute and a half.
You've been talking the whole time.
And that's because I'm the incumbent and all you attack.
But you don't get special privileges.
Go ahead. Let me say,
you know, she makes my point. The point here, she said, we need to get back to education, we need to get back to employment, we need to get back to these things. Since I've been back in a short 9-month period, I've gotten my education bill passed. I've exposed that the government didn't spend $400 million with our small business communities, like the law says. Since I've been back, I've written 40% of the ethics legislation. Since I've been back, I've opened up the city to the movie industry. And so these are things that you're getting done for the citizens of the District of Columbia. At the end of the day,
time.
You know, let's not be naive. There are 13 people. You need 7 votes for any action that passed.
Thank you, Mr. Orange.
You need 9 votes in order to override the mayor.
Let me ask you all a very, I think it's a simple question, but we'll see what you guys think. And we'll start with you, Mr. Biddle. Are each of you committed to serving a full 4-year term if you win this election? Mr. Biddle.
Yes.
Dr. Absolutely.
Yes.
Mr. Shapiro, let me stop with you, Mr. Shapiro. You got to see this one coming. You were on the Prince George's County Council. You were term limited. You had 2 years left on your term. As press accounts go, you were offered a pretty good job at the University of Maryland, and you quit in the middle of your term.
I wasn't offered a good job.
Well, regardless of why, you quit your job in the middle of your term. You didn't fulfill that term. Why should the voters of the District of Columbia believe, based on your track record, that you'll finish this term?
Because I keep my word. And so, yes, if I'm elected, I will be here for at least 4 years.
You were never asked when running for re-election in Prince George's County if you would fulfill your term?
Never asked.
And it wasn't just expected of you to fulfill your term?
You know, it's one of the things, and it's, from my perspective, it's a bit of a mistake around how we take up a public leadership role. It is a job, and it's a public service job, and it's a job that I did really, really well for 6 years and served the residents of the county extremely well. And I had a dear friend and mentor at the University of Maryland who was coming back and starting up a leadership center. I had term limits in any case. I was going to be out in 2 years, and it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to do public service.
What did it cost the taxpayers of Prince George's County?
I actually don't know because it was a small ward race. So if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say around $100,000.
Mr. Orange, would you make the commitment to fulfill your four-year term?
Let me just say this. I've been running for this office because I have a vision. I have served, and when I've lost, I've come back. And the bottom line here is, you know, I have a frame of reference. May I finish? I can't interrupt you.
He's running for mayor.
The thing is that I come from an extremely poor background. Seven sisters and two brothers. My parents only had a sixth grade education. If you look at the Vincent Orange record, it's very consistent. It's consistent on education and providing people with jobs to move forward. And that's what my passion is, and I'm back on the same issues. And that's the record. So I will do and stay in public service to get that accomplished. Now, my background, I've served as the CFO of the National Children's Center. I served as a tax accountant at Arthur Anderson Company. I've served as a vice president. So if it was about money, I would be over there. But for me, it's about my frame of reference and making sure that people...
Mr. Orange, to be clear, the answer is for you then would be no.
The answer for me is I'm going to fulfill the commitment that I've made to the citizens of the District of Columbia and the commitment to myself based on my frame of reference and my record.
Let me ask a question that I've gotten from several people that knew I was coming here today, and this, I believe, goes to Mr. Shapiro and Mr. Biddle. A lot of people believe that you two split the vote, the anti-Vincent Orange vote, and that will succeed in reelecting Mr. Orange. I'm wondering if the two of you have talked, if either one of you is considered bowing out so as to let the other one take all of that anti-incumbent vote. We'll start with you, Mr. Shapiro, for 30 seconds.
You know, it was a consideration when I first stepped into the race, and it was a consideration in my mind as soon as the post endorsement came out, because that has an effect on it too. But the bottom line is, there's another way of looking at this, and this is the important thing to think about. This is about leadership, and it is about experience. You want to talk about what splitting the difference is. I'm sitting here with two people who have held this office. We have an incumbent, and we have a former incumbent. If you want a fresh new face, if you want somebody who has a combination of a whole lot of experience, but not that much familiarity with the Wilson Building itself, a whole lot of experience in D.C., deep roots in D.C., but not in the Wilson Building, then this is a good choice for you. It is about change. This matters, and it matters a lot. This is an important election to break out and to do things differently, to break from the past. So from my perspective, I've got the best experience for this job, and we've got a great campaign, and we're going to find out in 2 weeks how good it is. Fully committed.
Mr. Biddle?
Yeah, so I made the decision to run many, many months ago, in part because after having served briefly on the council, I had a very good perspective on what we could do in this city if we had the right people on the council serve. And I made a decision based on the work that I've done throughout my career and my commitment to do everything I possibly can do to make this city as great as it can be to serve. Now, I also was called by numerous people across the city who asked me to consider sticking with council and public service because they know what I have to offer, right? I'm not here simply because I want to be doing this. I'm here because I know I can do this. I can do this better than the other people that are available. And people in this city, across the city, have been asking me to do it, and they have been supporting me every single step of the way. And I would not dishonor their commitment to me by ever considering getting out of this race because I've been called to do this, right? And the same way I have served them in the past, I will continue to serve them once I'm elected. And the other post has made it very clear. I am by far the best choice.
Dr. Holness, you wanted in?
Yes, I do want to weigh in on that because how many of you have ever heard of Cinderella? I've got my slipper ready for midnight at April 3rd because you've counted me out. Because you asked them to get out, if they were the ones. But you fail to realize that I'm a pastor in this city, and most people that vote in the District of Columbia attend someone's church. I am the president of the Interfaith Conference of Metropolitan Washington, the first female president of that organization, which encompasses Jains, Muslims, Jewish community, Zoroastrians, every community that you can think of is in that body. I serve as president. I'm a member of the largest sorority in this town, which is Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. So I tell you again, I have my slipper. Be with me at midnight on April 3rd.
Let's hope we have the results before at midnight. Mr. Orange, anybody you'd like to see drop out?
Let me just say that, you know, Mr. Bill served for 4 months, and I would say just take his 4 months and my 4 months and look at the difference. You know, Mr. Biddle needs to understand that the citizens of the District of Columbia rejected him 9 months ago. And the citizens of the District of Columbia brought me back. They brought me back to the council. And it was on ethics, and I came in and gave him poor ethics bill. It was on collecting our money because we lost $1 billion. We lost $300 million for not collecting taxes for non-residents and parking tickets. We lost $350 million for Medicaid reimbursements because we have agency directors that can't even file a payment. And we've lost money for people stealing. They let some low-level employees steal $50 million. We just convicted the person, well, the person just got convicted and doing a 2-year sentence for stealing $400,000. We have the unemployment compensation, $900,000 was stolen. We're paying dead people. So
Mr. Biddle, you want to back in on here quickly?
Well, yeah, I'm just curious which 4 months Mr. Orange is referring to because he was very quiet his first 4 months in the council. If we're going to compare apples to apples here, let's talk about what really went on during his first 4 months and my first 4 months. I mean, if we're going to have a conversation about comparing performance, let's have a straight-up conversation about real facts that are equal to each other, not cherry-pick the 4 months here, the 3 days there, that string together the record that he wants to believe in. That's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the facts. So which 4 months is he referring to?
The very
quickly, Mr. Orange, go ahead.
From the time that I came on, I got sworn in on May 10th. On July 14th, I was given the chairmanship of Local and Small Business Development. The next day, we went on recess. We came back, I immediately exposed...
No. See, you don't get to determine the calendar. The 4 months you got, you play the hand you were dealt. So deliver the goods in the first 4 months.
Go ahead.
May I finish?
Sure.
When the council goes on recess, by our rules, you can't do anything. You can't hold a hearing. And so I got the assignment on July 14th. The very next day, the council went on recess. Now, what I did while I was on recess, I prepared. And I came out of the door swinging. But in the first couple of months when I first got back, I did introduce that ethics legislation before the council regrouped and made Muriel Bowser the chairman of the Committee on Government Operations. My legislation was in the harbor, but they wanted someone else to lead it. The chairman didn't want me on those issues. And the collection bill, Mary Chase jumped on that right away because she knew Vincent Orange was coming in talking about the $1 billion we lost. That's why people sent me back down there. Deal with ethics, to deal with stealing, and to deal once again with education.
Let me ask, give you each 30 seconds on a quick campaign finance question. A lot of people again emailed me pointing out that, and you know, Mr. Orange, we'll start with you because when you ran against Mr. Brown for chair, you pointed out some irregularities in his campaign finance. He's now under federal investigation for such. But you recently revealed, or it's been revealed, that you took what you call some questionable money orders from Jeffrey Thompson. Why isn't the same criticism that you leveled at Mr. Brown a fair criticism for you, that if he couldn't keep track of his own campaign, how can he keep track of the city funds? And let me just ask you, why have you not returned the money to Jeff Thompson?
First of all, Mark, let's look at that. The question that I raised with Chairman Brown is that he filed a report that had an ending balance of $75,000. And the very next day, when he filed the next report, the beginning balance was zero. And I said, what happened to the money? If you go to bed at night with $75,000 in your pocket, you expect to wake up the next morning with $75,000. Now, my situation, on March 10th, the campaign finance report was due at midnight. And now we just found out that Jeff Thompson bought these money orders at 7 o'clock on March 10th. You know, so we're putting in all this information, $190,000 collected. So we get it in the system, but what we did do properly, we recorded it, we disclosed it, and we coded it properly. That's why you knew it was a money order. I coded it as it came in. Less than 3 weeks, I was audited by the Office of Campaign Finance. They asked me for 70 items.
Time.
I gave them all 70 items, and included in the 70 items Time. Were 12 money
Let
items.
Me ask you, go ahead, wrap up.
Yeah, okay, and within that.
You're keeping Tom Sherwood waiting, but, just so you know.
No, well, I'm saying, and within that, after they got all that information, they gave me a clean bill of health. Now, it's just like when the IRS audits you, they give you a clean bill of health, you move forward. I move forward. And it wasn't until this became an issue on March 2nd when Jeff Thompson, who was held in high esteem, got raided. And then they want to go back and look again. So I'm being audited for the second time. And I have indicated that if there's something suspicious, the Post has indicated 8% of what I collected could be money orders. Now, of that, when I really looked at it and put the CPA hat on, it really boils down to about $10,000 that can be in question, because under the law, he has LCC,
okay,
and those organizations can make
Let's move on. We're running out of time. Mr. Shapiro?
What Mr. Orange just said is that he's 90% ethical. You know, this is not a clean bill of health. This is a cancer that is metastasized. Right. This is hitting this issue around money orders is hitting folks across the city right now, and it's doing serious
across the nation. Hillary Clinton, Governor O'Malley,
Mr. Orange, let's let the other please. Mr. Shapiro, did you want to finish your thought?
Getting the question.
These are likely to be criminal acts, and let's not make light of it. It's a serious issue. It's a
criminal act.
It's potentially yours.
Oh, you got it. Come on.
Every time you bring up a story, the story changes about it.
You have gone a long way to the left. I mean, I'm surprised at you. If someone comes in and provides you some documents and you record it properly, you know, the most it could be is perhaps a finance violation.
So it's everybody else's fault and not yours.
No, I mean, Jeff Thompson could possibly be in trouble because he deceived folks and he deliberately did some things. I mean, in law, you have to have the intent. I did not have the intent to deceive anyone. If I had the intent to deceive someone, if I had the intent to deceive someone, I would have coded a money order as a check. That's where you show the intent. I coded it
properly. Mr. Orange, we were talking about the money orders and how campaigns are run, and 30 seconds, would you like to weigh in, Dr. Holness?
I would, because, it gets back to accepting corporate donations and accepting shady money. Mr. Orange, again, and as the others, they've all accepted money from corporations. Mr. Orange talked about going to the council and being prepared. I'm the freshest face up here talking about going to the council and being prepared. He has 4 degrees, most of us up here do, but they've all had an opportunity to go and do something on council, and none of them have been successful. And so, which is why I offer myself as a person who has not accepted any donations from corporations, will not accept corporate donations, because I believe that it should be left to the people to decide and not the corporations to run our city.
Mr. Biddle?
Yeah, so I think that the pay-to-play issue is part of this, but I think there's a larger issue here, frankly, which is the standard to which you need to have your elected leaders hold themselves to. And the standard can't simply be it's legal or I can get away with it, right? I mean, the standard has to be that it's right and wrong, and that you've got to hold yourself to a higher bar, because that's the only way you all are going to be able to trust the people you elect, is that you know they will go out of their way to do things that both are right and look right. So the suggestion that somebody brings you 26 money orders to your campaign, and, you know, as a candidate, maybe you don't see them, but the culture you've created within the campaign, that nobody there says, I think this looks odd, that there are 26 of them for $1,000 and they're all in order. I mean, at some point, a reasonable person would say, I've got to talk to somebody in the organization and put this out there, because I'm not going to let my candidate or someone I'm supporting get themselves into trouble with this. So what kind of culture are you creating? What kind of leader are you when people around you will allow you and your campaign to behave that way? And that's the problem our government has today. People aren't leading. They're doing what they think they can get away with, or what they can explain away as, I didn't know and it was legal. That's like, we've got to raise the bar. We've got to be better and have a much higher standard.
We are sadly out of time. I apologize. Can I just ask the audience one quick question by a show of hands? How many of you consider campaign finance in the district to be a serious issue that you want addressed by, that's a lot of
yes,
people.
Yes, don't.
How many people don't care about this and prefer to talk about other issues?
Education.
Okay. We are going to do our closing statements now. We're going to give the candidates 1 minute, and I believe the flip of my imaginary coin, it was Mr. Biddle going
absolutely.
First.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for coming out this evening. I appreciate you taking time to be involved in the process. Obviously, we talked about starting early voting yesterday, which will continue for the next week and a half, the weekend and the big day on April 3rd. Please take some time out of your busy schedules to make sure you vote, but also to spread the word to all of your friends. Because we've got to change the culture of our politics in the city. And the only way we're going to do that is if we participate in the process and we encourage our friends, neighbors, associates to engage in making decisions about the wisdom, the judgment, and the leadership of the people we can elect. Because things have to change, but they're not going to change on their own, and they're not going to change because we hope they'll change. Because hope isn't a strategy. So I hope you've learned some things about the candidates here today, and I hope that what you've learned is that I represent what we need to have on the council. As the Washington Post said, I am by far the best choice, because I bring the kind of leadership on the city's most important issue, education, as well as the credible ethical leadership we need to have on the council. Once again, my name is Seiko Biddle. I hope I can count on your vote, whether it's today, tomorrow, next week, or on April 3rd. Thank you all very much.
As I said, I'm Gail Anderson Holness, and Holness is the right choice. Holness is the right choice to continue talking about the education reform in the District of Columbia. Holness is the right choice to deal with employment for D.C. residents. Holness is the right choice to deal with parking issues that we're all confronted with in Washington, D.C. Holness is the right choice to deal with employment issues so that our residents can be employed. Holness is the right choice to represent you. I'm the new face, the newest face. I'm unbought. I'm unbossed. I'll speak truth to power. Just as these guys have said that they would have to get prepared when they went there, I'm a quick study. I learned fast. I've been an instructor. I've been a professor. I've been on both sides of the fence. And so I ask for your vote today. I am number two on the ballot. I have the longest name on the ballot, E. Gail Anderson Holness. I'm second to none. And as I said before, I talked about Cinderella, but I also heard a sermon about running with the big dogs. I'm running with some big dogs. I'm just a little chihuahua. Big dogs get tired quick. Chihuahuas like a Timex clock. We take a ticking and we keep on licking. Take a licking and keep on ticking. Both E. Gail Anderson Holness on April 3rd.
From my perspective, there's a pretty simple equation in this race, which is we need a break from the past. We have a very broken political system. You have a choice to make. You may or may not be clear about who you're voting on, but be clear about this. This is going to be a horse race over the next few weeks. And what I would encourage you to do is support the candidate who has the best experience for the job. Deep roots in Washington, D.C. I'm not a stranger to this city. I am a stranger to the Wilson Building. And it's a great combination. It matters that I'm able to bring my legislative experience and my commitment to the city together. And the most important thing that I can say is in the next 2 weeks, it's just going to come down to the organization that we run. I've got a great campaign. And in real politic terms, that matters. Because I'm going to be able to reach enough voters and make a strong enough case to get myself elected. And I would ask you to be a part of that effort. It's an important election. and I ask for your support. Thank you very much.
Well, folks, once again, I'm Vincent Orange. I'm the at-large council member, and I just implore you to examine the record. Now, you saw a lot of attacks today, but I just want to tell you the whole truth for nothing but the truth. Now, Mr. Biddle, he gave you part of the truth, but he intentionally ran in violation of the Federal Hatch Act for the council. But he doesn't talk about that, but does that make him a bad person? He intentionally hired a campaign manager, and he knew that campaign manager walked into a government building with a gun. He knew that that campaign manager had been involved in petition fraud. Does that make him a bad person? Mr. Shapiro, he quit on the citizens of the District of Maryland, Prince George's County. He just up and quit when he was the chair. And then when he came to D.C. and had an opportunity to vote in a special election, he quit again. He didn't vote. So let's look at everybody. You have to examine everyone and also examine the record. That's all I have to say to you tonight. Thank you very much, 4-6 Democrats, for having this forum to examine everyone, but examine the record. It's the greatest time for the greatest number. It's always number one on the ballot.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. Ward 6 Dems, Charles Allen, and Brent Elementary for hosting. We're off to the Black Cat, where they serve booze.